Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay up to date with the latest news in Wisconsin and beyond. Subscribe to the Civic Media Digest at civicmedia.us/email. You'll get the top podcast hours of your favorite civic media programs like the Maggie Dawn Show, of course, news and commentary from our team, and you'll learn what's going on across our statewide network right into your inbox each week. Go check it out. That's civicmedia.us/email. Again, my very big thanks to Stephen Prince, the vice chair of the Patriotic Millionaires. He is the former CEO of Card Market, Inc. He's a rich guy that thinks rich people should be taxed more. Why? Because it's good for the economy. I want to say that again. Rich people should be taxed more because it is good for the economy. A thriving middle class is good for the economy. A middle class that can afford healthcare and education for their children, a roof over their heads and food on the table, maybe even take a vacation, that can actually retire with dignity, that is good for the economy. I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that what Stephen is talking about, what the Patriotic Millionaires are talking about most of the time, and I think what most of us mean is, when we say tax the rich, I'm not talking about you, probably. Unless you're a CEO making a boatload of money. Here's how the Patriotic Millionaires define rich, and I think that this works pretty well. They define rich as anyone that's making $1 million or more in annual income or investment returns and has at least $5 million in assets. These are people who can well afford to pay more in taxes. And again, these are marginal tax rates. That's really critical. Why is it so important now? What has been going on that puts us in such a place of peril? We have the greatest levels of wealth and income inequality than our country has seen in 100 years, basically since the Gilded Age, you know, the time of the steel barons and monopolies and the thing that led up to the Great Depression. Yeah. We're at that level of wealth inequality in our country. That's not good for our economy. That's not good for wealthy people, frankly, ultimately, because if they can't continue to sell their products to U.S. consumers and others, well, that wealth won't last for very long. Now, of course, those that have so much wealth that they never have to work again, that all they need to do is invest in other companies, that'll work pretty well for them. Here's a couple of other facts. Of course, the marginal income tax rate was 91% as late as the early 60s. Today, it's 37%. Corporate tax rate was 35% for decades. Now it's 21%. Totally unnecessary. The estate tax was 65% on inheritance over $650,000. Today, rich heirs can inherit up to $22 million and never pay 1 cent in federal taxes. And here's what people keep talking to me about inflation. I can do a long analysis of inflation. There's about a set of 8 to 10 factors that, given the mix of those factors and the acuteness of various macroeconomic adjustments, you're going to see inflation. Well, inflation's coming down. It's back under 3%. But here's what's really making it feel like everything's more expensive for people: the minimum wage. And all of the wages that sort of tick off of that, which is most of U.S. wages, has lost 30% of its purchasing power since the late 60s.
Purchasing power.
Key
phrase there.
Right? When you hear things like the Consumer Price Index, there's various ways to measure purchasing power, CPI being one of them. We can talk about the different baskets of goods that are getting measured. Does it include gas and groceries, things like that? Why is it sometimes important to take gas and groceries out? Because the prices fluctuate a lot. But one of the ways to sort of get an overarching picture is, hey, can people still buy the same amount of stuff as they did, say, 40, 50 years ago? And the answer to that is no. When you couple that with the rise in income inequality, which therefore makes it so much harder for middle-class families to get ahead, for your children to do better than you have, That coupling of extraordinary and acute income and wealth inequality in this country with the loss of middle-class families' purchasing power over 50 years. I'm not talking about in 4 years because inflation will come and go. But what you're seeing macroeconomically is those two factors coming together. And guess what's happening, folks? Rich people are getting richer faster. That's what wealth and income inequality does, is it accelerates without government intervention to place middle-class families back at the center of our economy, which they always, always need to be.
I want to give everybody a little bit of a reference here for you. If you just look up Pew Research Center, for most U.S. workers, real wages have barely budged in decades. It lays it all out for you. It gives you an easy chart to look at. And here's something, and we're talking purchasing power here. Back in 1964, if you made $2.50, it is worth $20.27 today. Meaning that if you were making $2.50 back in 64, you're doing pretty all right. You're doing just as well as someone right nowadays making $20.27. So when you guys back in 1964 bought your house for 3 raspberries, it was because you could afford it with your $2.50 paycheck and then have only one of you have to work and have several kids because you bought your house for 3 raspberries. But now things cost more. There's a little bit on there, but yet our minimum wage has stayed the same. And in fact, since 1980, pretty much you can pinpoint that's the exact moment when Reagan came in and said,
Brian, who got elected back?
I don't know what changed there, but I think it might have been the corporate tax rate in Reaganomics coming in. Wealth inequality skyrockets from that point on. And by the way, last thing on corporate taxes, have you guys ever been in New York City? You ever been to anywhere named called Rockefeller? Anything Rockefeller?
Yeah,
that dude seemed to do pretty well during that 91%. Tax. I'm just one of several people around that city that maybe was okay with a 91% tax rate. It's possible to succeed.
Here's what bugs me the most. When people like Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are asked specific questions about their economic policies, they refuse to answer them. Because here's what's up. J.D. Vance was on Meet the Press yesterday, and he was asked specific questions about what I'm just going to say editorially are really stupid economic policies from Trump and Vance, including, not the least of which, a whopping 20% tariff, which will operate as a sales tax. A tariff that operates as a sales tax, which is what all tariffs do because they eventually show up in your consumer products. And in housing. Rich people don't buy stuff anymore. They max out on the stuff they can buy. So sales taxes are borne by middle-class people who spend the vast majority of their household income buying stuff because they need the stuff to live. A 20% tariff across the board will decimate the middle class, will plunge our economy into a recession, and is estimated by mid-2025, if Donald Trump is elected, to cost the American economy 3 million jobs and increase the deficit by $4 trillion. Excuse me, not the deficit, the debt. Inflation will skyrocket, and of course, a 20% tariff, which operates on a sales tax, will not be paid by the richest Americans because they already have basically all the stuff they could possibly need. And frankly, they could afford a 20% sales tax on the other stuff they might want to buy. You put all of Donald Trump and J.D. Vance's plans together, and they will cost middle-class families on average nearly $4,000 a year. I don't know about too many middle-class people that I know that are like, oh yeah, I can totally absorb a haircut of $4,000 a year. I don't know too many people that would say that.
No, can't do it.
But every rich person I know that has at least $5 million in the bank and is raking in at least $1 million a year in income or investment return Guess what they wouldn't ever blink at? $4,000.
And you know what? It's not like we're just pulling this out of nowhere. Because this exact stupid economic policy, adding tariffs, has been tried before. They did it during, what was that? The Great Depression, where there was a huge inflation problem, and they said, hey, let's go and raise these tariffs so that we can maybe boost up, you know, domestic goods. And I think there's a famous line from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which he's teaching about that exact thing. And what?
Did it work? Anyone? Anyone know the effects? It did not work.
And the United States sank further into the Great Depression.
Great Depression. Like, there's a movie line about it, I think, is Brian's point. Like,
yes,
it should
be
so this simple.
It's a movie
maybe Donald Trump could watch a movie and grasp a concept.
Oh, he does.
Although
it's,
I think two hours might be a bit too long.
No, it's just not something like Sicario 2, The Day of the Soldad, which is what he based his foreign policy on. I wish I was lying. He literally quoted it when we were talking about the border.
We will have to get into Donald Trump's favorite films on another show, because I want to get all of your impressions, favorite moments from the DNC before we run out of time today. 855-752-4842. I'm just going to let you all know my favorite interview, and then I want to know what yours was, Brian, that we did, that you and I helped host on here on the Maggie Dawn Show, was probably police officer from the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department, Danny Hodges.
Yeah, Danny was awesome.
Danny was awesome. I interviewed him on Wednesday, I believe, and he gives a blow-by-blow, and I mean that literally, account of what happened on January 6th. Officer Hodges has testified before Congress. He testified in one of the criminal prosecutions against the J6 insurrectionists. That was an amazing interview. Also, Dan Kildee, congressman from Michigan, been in the House of Representatives for, I think, just over 12 years. Boy, did he have some great nuggets and a very practical view of what is the business of an elected official, and it is to get things done for people. I would highly recommend checking that out. Other favorites were, of course, Jason Ray, the secretary of the DNC, retired Army colonel and former U.S. Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security, John Tien. He was incredible. Former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh. And my three favorite guests would have to be Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson. Today at the DNC segment, special guest County Executive David Crowley and Milwaukee County Board Chairwoman Marcelia Nicholson, who helped me host and stopped by a couple of times. Thank you to all of you. A texter from the 812 WRCE, live from the center. Hello, WRCE listener, saying my favorite parts of the DNC were the accolades and applause received by Hillary Clinton and Elizabeth Warren. Agreed. I was especially proud of Hillary Clinton for finally acknowledging Shirley Chisholm and the great Black women leaders, political leaders that helped bring us to this moment. Joanne from Madison, what were your favorite moments? You got about 30 seconds, Joanne.
Michelle Obama saying that Trump was probably pursuing one of those Black jobs. And she had that look in her eye. I think we'll be having Black presidents from now on, but that's just my opinion, and I'm very happy to state what I just stated.
I love it, Joanne. Yeah, he might be trying to get one of those Black jobs, said Michelle Obama. Everyone in the arena erupted. That was one of my favorite lines as well. What were yours? 855-752-4842. 855-752-4842. It'll be all you and all Brian when we come back here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Voodoo economics.